Today's episode of the Ringer NBA Show on the Ringer Podcast Network is brought to you by ZipRecruiter, the 2018 presenting sponsor of the Bill Simmons Podcast. Hey, that's my podcast. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. Little known fact, the Cavs use ZipRecruiter for their two trades. All right, not sure I made that up. But their powerful technology distributes your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards and identifies... Wow, I'm so excited about ZipRecruiter. My voice broke. Then identifies the right people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. My listeners can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/BS. Wanted to tell you about a couple podcasts on the Ringer Podcast Network. We launched the Recapables. First one went up today, a awards/recap of season one of Atlanta. We did that because every Thursday night, right after Atlanta ends, if you like that show, and I'm guessing there's a little bit of Ringer NBA Show Atlanta overlap. And you should, if you're not watching Atlanta, I don't know what's wrong with you. I really don't. I don't know what's wrong with you as a human being. But we did season one awards right now on the Recapables. Allison Herman, Micah Peters, and host Amanda Dobbins. And then on Thursday night, right after Atlanta ends on FX, we put the podcast up. It's like a little post-game show. 18 minutes, breaks down everything that happened, a couple awards, and then we're out. Let them be your buddies that you just watched Atlanta with. We have Billions coming up, and Westworld are the second and third shows we'll be doing. There's a lot of rumors that me and Mallory Rubin might be hosting the Billions one. I do love Billions. So anyway, check that out. Check out the Bill Simmons podcast today. It talked about Ronda Rousey, WWE versus UFC, and the 2013 Oscars. What would happen if they had a five-year waiting period before they gave out those awards? We did that today on the BS podcast. Check that out. Don't forget, Ringer NBA Show. Every day now, we're going to be cranking. Tuesday, KOC and Verno. Wednesday, sources say, some interviews, some other stuff. We're going to try to get something going every day on Wednesdays. Thursday is group chat, hosted by Chris Ryan with a rotating cast of Ringer staffers, which is also going to be running as a video as well. And then Fridays, draft class, Kevin O'Connor, Jonathan Jarks, sometimes Danny Chow when he's not eating burritos in East LA. They'll be breaking down what's promising to be one of the weirdest lotteries we've ever had. There's a bunch of blue chippers. There's a bunch of wild cards. Who knows where Michael Porter goes? Trey Young's in a swoon right now. Does he follow the top seven? All these teams are tanking, which we're going to talk about with Haral Bob Valgaris in a second because he's coming on. But that's on Fridays. I think this is a great feed. It's an honor to be on here. I'm so glad I invited myself. Let's do it.
He's got smoke coming off his fingertips. He's as hot as a blowtorch.
It's a heat check. You knew that was coming. It's heat check time.
Bob Valgaris is here, a longtime BS Report guest and now a BS podcast guest and now a Ringer NBA Show. Jason Concepcion back from Boston. You were there for the Sloan Conference. Have you been in the Sloan Conference, Bob?
Yeah, I went once, spoke once. I was supposed to do the basketball panel last year, but I had to cancel at the last minute. I think I'm on the shit list. I don't think I'll ever get
invited. You're on the shit list?
I've been canceled twice. So I've been on panels twice.
Yeah.
It's an important flex.
What was the big buzz this year, Jason?
The big buzz was Sam Hinkie in the house and just talking about tanking, talking about the state of the league. There's a lot of like, how did we get to this point with the modern NBA. There was a panel with Nash and Battier talking about like the and Daryl Morey talking about the way the Suns changed the league.
Yeah,
there was a panel with Sam Hinkie talking about the process. So it's a lot of like, how did we get here?
Yeah. Well, so the two things.
Oh, and Obama. Which nobody's allowed to talk
We're
about.
We're not allowed to talk about
We're
it.
We're not allowed to talk about it.
I didn't want to mention it. Two things that you care about. One is the lottery reform, which we'll talk about in a second. The other was like the Nash Suns changing basketball and faster pace and more threes, all stuff you were tweeting about like since we've had Twitter. And now everyone's playing basketball this way. And you are on the high end of the spectrum, Bob, of you love this. Like you love what the Rockets are doing. You love the volume of threes.
I liked it when was doing it. I was like, why don't people do this? Now that everyone's doing it, I don't sure I like it so much.
Oh, good. So you're souring on it.
A little bit. Okay. It's just not as fun to watch basketball anymore. It's just drive, kick, swing, three-point shot.
That's
over,
how I
over
feel.
And over again.
Yeah, it is a little monotonous when, and especially when you don't have the level of talent that like a team like the Rockets has, and you just watch guys who are like 35% shooters.
35 would be great. Yeah.
Yeah. 34, 33, like taking six threes a game.
Yeah.
The variance. So like you can be down 18 now in the NBA in the third quarter with 14 minutes left and come back.
Are they playing 14-minute quarters nowadays?
No, I'm just saying like 2 minutes left in the third quarter.
Okay. Yeah.
And in the old days, it's like that team's up 18, they're not coming back. And now it's like that team could hit four threes in a row and they're down six and there's and we still have a whole quarter to go. So that part's been a little more interesting.
It's a lot more swingy for sure. Yeah.
But for the most part, I'm with you. I get bored by it sometimes. I really have trouble watching the Rockets and they have two of the best 12 guys in the league.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many more times I can just watch Harden with four guys standing around him doing crazy James Harden stuff.
What makes the Rockets especially objectionable to watch is that they don't just launch a lot of threes, but they also do like what the old Rockets, remember they had before the illegal defense and the zone rules, the Rockets used to take Katino Mobley and Steve Francis, and they would basically have four guys stand all the way on the other side and you weren't allowed to leave them.
Right.
And they would do that. And so they had the ISO rules. That's what the Rockets do now. They do that with Harden and Chris Paul. And the part that's kind of interesting is they don't just do that, but they also like get so many, I call them jabroni fouls, where it's like the player puts his hand out, now the ball gets swinging up through.
Yeah.
And so it's just really kind of painful to watch. Last night's game against Denver was super painful to watch.
And on top of it, they probably have the worst home crowd of any good basketball team. And you know what's funny is Zach and I talked about this. We did a podcast last month and I was expecting like the Houston fans to be pissed off about it, but they were like, our crowd sucks.
Well, I think the thing that people would say is the traffic in Houston is really bad and weird. Like it'll rain and all of a sudden there's a random flood and now all of a sudden you can't get anywhere. That said, it is strange to watch their games and be like, why aren't there more people there in the second quarter?
Or where's the noise?
Yeah.
Where it's like James Harden just hit a 35-foot three to end the quarter. They had a good game against Golden State where they did have a crowd and it was noticeable what it was, but from a gambling standpoint, you're not gambling. You're out.
No,
right?
I'm doing other stuff now.
If you were gambling, we're not.
Yeah, that didn't seem very definitive.
No, I just am. I'm doing other stuff now.
From a gambling standpoint, all the variants, would it be harder to gamble the way the basketball's played now? Or
I think a little bit. Yeah, I read something that said that there's actually the variance hasn't increased with the number of 3-point shots. I guess because the consistency of the shooting is pretty consistent in terms of. Like you don't have a lot of players that are 25% shooting threes. You have players who are all in like the 40s. I find that it just makes it just not as there's not as many matchup contests anymore. You used to have matchup contests where you would see like you'd have like Hakeem playing against someone. How does he match up against them? Or like Shaq, how are they going to match up? So you'd have guys that never played, like Jason Collins would never play then because they're playing Shaq. So that's why I like watching the Sixers, because you have Embiid and they're just an interesting team. It's a lot different.
Yeah.
I don't need to see a bunch of like rim running fives and a bunch of unathletic fours who can just shoot threes over and over and over again and stretch the defense. I find that to be really kind of monotonous after a
while. That's what's kind of sad about like the decline of the grit and grind Grizzlies and DeMarcus Cousins getting injured for the season is you're just not seeing these kind of weird teams anymore, teams that switch it up. The grit and grind Grizzlies, like the fact that they were able to compete for as long as they did, taking the air completely out of the ball and like not shooting threes and having a negative point differential is incredible.
Right.
And is something we will probably never see again.
And now you watch, I mean, they're not the grit and grind Grizzlies anymore, but now you watch Marc Gasol and Marc Gasol is always outside the 3-point line, the top of 3-point line. And it's just kind of ridiculous to me. Like I'm a big rebounding lunatic. Like I don't understand why some teams had success not going after offensive rebounds and getting back in transitions. At the Doc Rivers Celtics were the first teams. But they did that kind of in spite, like they were successful in spite of that. It wasn't as if that's what really led them to having a great defense. They had great defensive scheme. They're the first ones to overload the ball side. It wasn't because they were getting back in transition. And you see these teams who are playing other teams who just never run or in situations where there's never going to be an like, let's say you have the second to last shot of the quarter. And now you take a shot and your guys are hustling back to get back. And well, that team is never going to get a fast break because they want to hold the ball for the last shot. So why would you not crash the boards then? But you have teams that just aren't smart enough to really realize, oh, there's situational times when maybe we should rebound. Maybe like when we're losing by seven with 2 minutes left in the game, we should crash the boards instead of trying to get back in transition. But they don't do that.
Shane Betty had an interesting anecdote during the Modern Basketball panel with Nash and Jack McCallum, where he was saying that once the Suns really started to get going, Van Gundy was like, okay, we're not going to crash the offensive boards anymore. And Battier was like, this is how I get my points. You know, I'm not a great scorer. Sure. The way I get my points is I just run in and try and make something happen. So that was like a big change for him when teams really started to not value offensive rebounds as much and just be like, okay, somebody's got to get back.
I still feel like there's a place for them. Like the Celtics lost the game to the Clippers before the All-Star break, and the Clippers were just killing them on the boards, and they couldn't.
Yeah,
they couldn't keep them off.
And the Clippers never go after offensive rebounds, but they did in the one game against Golden State that they won in Golden State, where Lou Williams had 50 points.
Yeah. Right.
Montrezl Harrell just went nuts on the glass.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there is opportunities for it for sure. And the reason why I bring it up is like, why would you want your center, Marc Gasol, like marginalized out on the 3-point line? Like, I get why it brings the other center out. Now it creates driving lanes, but if you don't even have guys who can drive, what is the point of having these driving lanes? So, yeah, there is a point.
That's why Kevin Love, the way the Cavs used him, seemed like one of the great wastes of anyone this decade.
Sure.
This guy who's unbelievable around the rim, great instincts on rebounding, and you have him 25 feet from the basket. It's like, this is the best thing he does.
Yeah, DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis are the two biggest examples of it to me, because you have Anthony Davis who will just get anything around him. He's just like a vacuum. And you have him sitting there learning how to shoot. I remember when Alvin Gentry became the head coach, and he's like, the first thing we need to do is have Anthony Davis learn how to shoot threes. And it's like,
no, not really.
Yeah. To me, it's kind of silly.
I was talking with some people from the Cavs front office just about the league. And we were talking about Okafor and how it's almost tragic that if that guy had come around in the 80s, he'd be like a 4-time all-star that averaged like 20-6. And people would be like, oh, he's great. But he literally just missed the era of the low post player. Like, now he's got to lose weight. He's got to figure out how to extend his range. And here's a guy who's been told his whole life, this is how you succeed with your body type in the professional leagues.
He's also like terrible at defense.
Yes. Doesn't
rebound. So I was like,
At the same time, you watch those games from the 80s and 90s, guys running half speed. It's not like that could have been ameliorated by the play style.
I've always been if you have one elite skill, there's a place for you in the NBA guy.
Yeah.
And now I'm wavering on that.
No, I think you need more than one.
You definitely need more than one. But like in the old days, it's like that guy does this and he's really good at it. So he's going to play 20 minutes a game. Like the Celtics, you've been killing the Greg Monroe signing.
It's worst ever.
I thought he was going to be really good for them because they needed somebody to run the second unit offense through. And I don't want to write it off yet because I'm a Celtics fan and I don't want to admit defeat, but he's just playing a different sport than they are.
Right,
and he's out there and everything's slower and he doesn't know how to switch. Yeah.
He's just really bad on, he's like,
it's a disaster so far.
When they played the Knicks and he made you forget how bad a defender Enes Kanter is in the pick and roll. Like you just were like, oh yeah, Enes Kanter can defend the pick and roll better than Greg Monroe. You're like, what's going on here? Because Enes Kanter was like one of the worst pick and roll defenders in the league in the last 10 years.
But Kanter, you and I were arguing about this last year. That's a guy who has specific skills, right?
An elite rebounder.
Yeah, he's a great offensive rebounder.
Good offensive rebounder and good around the basket against guys who aren't great defenders. And I never understood why OKC just quit on him last year when their other players weren't that good.
Well, they
still
quit on him.
At least he brings something.
Well, they quit on him because
he's going to guard anyone. Yeah, I know they're torching
him. And teams identified the fact that you could just pick and roll him to death.
That's the thing about Kanter. Like if you're trying to win 41 to 45 games, you can get away with Enes.
Is that what you're trying to do?
You know, if you're trying to be
to
be a middling team to a 500 team, sure, Enes Kanter, fine.
Sure.
But if you're trying to actually make hay in the playoffs, teams are just going to pick.
Well, there's a clip of Billy Donovan mouthing like, "We can't play Kanter."
That was
like,
devastating.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, it was funny because like if he would have been on my Twitter 10 minutes prior, he would have realized that they can't play Kanter in the series.
So one thing Kevin O'Connor wrote for us today in the Ringer about. And this is something he and I had been talking about a lot over the last few weeks about good stats, bad stats, whether we've gone too far now with some of the advanced stuff and some of the stuff that's out there that people are writing entire columns about or doing entire podcasts about, like RPM and defensive rating, and thinking like that's somebody's defensive rating when actually it's just the team's defensive rating when they're on the floor.
Well, RPM takes into account the level of players who are with you and also that you're playing against. So it's not just when you're on the court, it's also when you're on the court. Like let's say if you play all your minutes with LeBron James, your RPM is going to come down because LeBron's going to play. If you play all your minutes against LeBron James, your RPM should go up because you're
playing. But these are still gimmicky stats though. Like I think teams look at them, but I don't think they're judging players by some of these advanced stuff that we have.
When all there was play-by-play data, really when all that's all there was, there wasn't the camera tracking data, it was just play-by-play data. RPM, not necessarily RPM, but adjusted plus minus, which was started by Wayne Winston and Sagarin, I think, or something like that. Those were the best delineators of who are players who are really good on defense. That was a pretty good predictor of that.
A pretty good predictor.
Yeah, like
but
the best
not necessarily
that was out there.
Lights out.
But it's better than what anything else was out there. Now the fact is now we have camera tracking data. You can look and see like very specifically who was guarding whom, when, what type of play it was. Was he involved in the play? You can really look at a lot more data. Then maybe it's minimized a little bit. But before the camera tracking era, I would say that adjusted plus minus was pretty good.
So you like some of this stuff because I don't.
The thing about
I think
it is,
it's fine. I like looking at it. I don't take it seriously.
Well, the thing that's interesting about it is that it will wildly fluctuate as the season goes on because the amount of data you have and the way it's regularized based on who you're playing against and who's on the court, it can be, and just you're on the court and the 3-point shot goes in, and that will maybe after you've gone past a certain level of, let's say, going from like a reference set to actually being your stats are now being used, it can wildly vary. So,
but you need like hundreds of games to really get
it. Yeah, you need hundreds of games, exactly. And you're going to see like a lot of like weird things like Evan Eschmeyer's a great player and that's why the Mavericks went and signed him for like all this money because he was a big adjusted plus minus guy. But he also probably was just fluky. That happens.
Well, and sometimes you're going against like the second unit. That can mean...
Sure, just sometimes the shots just go in when you're on the court and you're not doing anything.
I'm amazed, like we've reached a point with basketball on the internet where it's like the end of November. And people are writing these long, complicated pieces based on these really small sample sizes where the fluctuation, yeah. I don't
well,
even
do
know
you remember the,
how you capture it.
Do you remember the articles that were written about the Orlando Magic and how Frank Vogel
because they were hot for, and we had
they
Kevin
shot
Clark.
Like 53% from three in the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, we had the Ringer's Kevin Clark in our Slack, who's the only Magic fan any of us know. And he's just like, this is not sustainable. We're making all of our shots.
Yeah. I think we need to also like delineate between offensive stats, which I think are pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
And defensive stats, which are, I don't think there's anybody out there that would tell you that there's one defensive stat that you could use to
really
predict
anything.
Yeah, there isn't.
No. And I'm not saying that it's great. I'm just saying they're just, it's a lot better than looking at just like raw plus minus, for instance.
I still love the eye test. I still think it matters. And even like at the All-Star game, we were talking when we were walking in, like I really enjoyed that All-Star game and I like seeing all the guys out there. And it's funny to just be at a game like that and know who really knows how to play basketball. Like Al Horford, who has been maligned, you know, his stats aren't, he's making $30 million a year. His stats aren't as great as you would think.
Right.
But he does a lot of little stuff. And you see him even in the All-Star game where everyone's running around with a chicken with their head cut off. And then there's certain guys who are just like, I know how to play basketball. I've been doing this my whole life. I know how to go here. Oh, this guy, I'll switch over. And I still wonder if we have stats that can totally capture that.
It's hard. The problem with the eye test is, and why I like something like adjusted plus minus or any type of metric, is that the computer is just always on. It's watching everything. It's watching every minute of every play. It keeps track of something. It may not be keeping track of what you would if you personally watched it yourself, but try watching every game and every possession and paying attention, like using the eye test. So you miss a lot. So the cool thing about having stats like that is it can identify a player like Evan Eschmeyer, and you can go back now and you can go back and watch his minutes and be like, oh yeah, this is garbage.
Yeah.
But, or you could, or you.
Shouts to Evan Eschmeyer, wherever he is.
I don't even know if it is Evan Eschmeyer.
Wherever he is right now.
It might be someone else.
Mavs,
there's
former
definitely
Mavs great Evan Eschmeyer, wherever you are.
Jim McElvain was another one, right? He was an early advanced.
Yeah, there was, but so the problem with the eye test is you get signings like Eddie Curry, who like someone watched him playing with the Sonics. Or not James, or Jerome James.
Jerome James.
Yeah. That was literally one play. That was actually three games.
Yeah, but we had. Yeah, that was probably an eye test.
I was writing my column for page two joking about the terrible contract that was coming that Isaiah Thomas was going to give it to him. God. Remember he got hot in the playoffs?
He's
like, oh God, Isaiah, I hope he doesn't see this.
For
but
me,
there's
I,
been other guys like that too, though, that have gotten super hot. Like, who's the player who played for the Pacers? Probably a fine player, but he's been injured.
Austin Crozier.
No,
was one member in the finals.
The Rockets, where he hit a bunch of 3-point shots, and then I believe versus the Raptors, he hit a bunch of 3-point shots.
Solomon Hill.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you looked at his numbers throughout the year, and you're like, this guy's not a good 3-point shooter, but if you watch that series, he'd look great. Or like, you know, Paul George shot 0-for-12 in the previous game, or 0-for-9. There's just a lot of like random, like as random and as the samples are really small in something like using like adjusted plus minus, the same is true of eye tests where depending on when you decide to watch.
Well, the worst case is Doc Rivers.
Yeah.
Who for 3 years, sorry, Isaac, for 3 years only signed guys who had played a good game against him.
Yeah.
cresting with the Byron Mullen signing, which Byron Mullen's had like two good games in his entire career, both against Doc Rivers.
Wow.
Doc Rivers is like, yeah, he's going to be the stretch five we need. It's like, no, he's actually not. But yeah, it was 4 years of that.
This is,
and they threw away the CP Blake dynasty.
I think, like, you know,
that was a dynasty.
What you want is you want the eye test and you want the numbers to align on some kind of ruling.
Yeah.
I think when those two things are in conflict, that's when you have some really, that's when you should dig in further. I think Andrew Wiggins is a guy who, coming out of college, everyone was saying he's going to be an elite defender, elite defender, elite defender. And then you started to dig into the advanced numbers and it showed that he was not a defender, like even a good defender maybe. That's when you run into some interesting cases, just like that. Andrew Wiggins, like, why is this happening? He looks everything you, he's got the length, he's got the athleticism. He seems like he should be a good defender. And then you kind of dig into it and you're like, okay, maybe not.
Yeah. It's interesting to look back at, you know, the last 25 years of basketball. Because I've been like thinking about if I wrote a sequel to my book, what would it look like? And the biggest thing that changed the last 10 years is how we evaluate players. Because before we had these more primitive numbers. And I, by the way, I still love a basketball box score. I still think you can learn more from a basketball box score than any other box score. But you look back at some of the things we thought we knew. And now you have the context of like possession, the possession rate, the how many shots you can get off in a game and things like that. I knew some of that stuff. Like I was trying to figure out the 60s. I knew the 60s were weird. I knew like Wilt's 50 a game and Oscar. There were just so many field goals a game. But if you go back and see what I wrote, I basically just did field goals a game. We didn't have like adjusted pace, any of that stuff. Yeah. And I think like, the 90s and the 2000s are a really interesting reevaluation time. Like somebody like Kobe, who took just a shitload of shots, who's, if you look at his advanced metrics, they're good, obviously, because he was a superstar. Not quite as good as we remember.
Right.
Whereas like somebody like T-Mac, it actually swung more toward T-Mac's favor. I don't know. I'm ready to rethink some of this stuff.
Yeah, the cool thing about the reason why it's something like adjusted plus minus, for instance. First of all, you need a lot of data. And by the time you have a lot of data, it's not like the players are static individuals.
Yeah.
Things change. So by the time you have enough data on a player, they sometimes get better, they sometimes get worse. And so you're never, ever going to actually fully capture it. So especially nowadays where the players are improving so much, it's rare that you see a player not come back, especially like a very good player, not come back with something new in his toolkit at the start of a season.
And I think social media is good for constantly pointing out how bad you are at something.
Like, yeah, it's different.
I think it's changed James Harden's career. I think 20 years ago,
he
just sort of sucked on defense his whole life. Now he kind of sucks on defense, but he tries at least.
What is a good, Bob, I'm interested in this. Like what is we always talk about small samples, and what would you say is an adequate sample size, whether it be minutes or games or whatever, to really evaluate a guy's either career or how he's playing at the time?
Yeah, it's tricky. So it also depends on what specifically you're trying to evaluate. So are you trying to evaluate if he's a good defender? You probably need not very many plays. Are you trying to evaluate his efficacy as a three-point shooter? You probably need more shots. So it is tricky. It varies a lot. I would think you need at least half a season of, let's say, 25 to 30 minutes a game to really get an idea of how good a player is. But the problem with that is that usually when you have a new player, at like a year one player is going to be vastly different than the same player in year two.
Right.
So it's almost as though your numbers are always going to be lagging a huge amount of the time.
One of the things I don't like about this stuff is so much of it depends on who you're playing with.
Yeah.
And like if you're playing with Steve Nash in the 2000s,
right,
offensively you're just going to be better. Like Sean Marion was not as good of a player as the stats made him seem because he's playing with Steve Nash.
Sure.
Like I don't know. There's no way to calculate what that's worth.
Yeah, in theory that...
I love Sean Marion, by the way. I'm just saying, like, he won the lottery for those 4 years with Steve Nash.
In theory, that's like what adjusted plus minus is supposed to capture. Because it's supposed to take all the minutes he played with Steve Nash, put them in a bucket, get an evaluation for that. Now when you're playing minutes without Steve Nash, how did you perform? And then the numbers can vary wildly.
But I don't think that's fair because you're bringing in a backup point guard who's completely the opposite of Steve Nash.
Right.
It's like you're taking the maestro versus like...
Yeah. Yeah, you're
taking Earl Watson or somebody. Like, there's no way to.
Yeah.
Although you kind of liked Earl Watson.
I liked him. He's a really interesting dude.
He was a bad example. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know what bad. Howard Eisley. Whatever. Like
Howard Eisley would be a good one.
And I think with Philly, that's why it's some of the stuff. Embiid is definitely an impact defensive guy.
Yes.
Embiid is amazing.
But at the same time, when he's not really in the game, it's such a drop off that I don't know what to make with the disparity of those two things. Like, he's definitely a monster.
Right.
But it's not like they have anyone off their bench. Whoever they bring in is going to be just the biggest drop off of all time.
The other problem with that is, like, so let's say you do a really good job of evaluating when you're playing with Embiid, when you're playing without Embiid, right? That's like the idea of adjustment bias. But now, like, you're going to play with Embiid. It's a close game. And now it's a blowout because they're winning, and now you're playing without Embiid. That's a different game of basketball.
Yeah.
So, like, now you have to account for, is the game even real? Or is it like a 24-point game with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter where no one's really trying, and those are your minutes? So you have to weed those minutes out. And then you have to look at, there's just a bunch of different things you can look at, that's, which is why they'll never be like a great one all catch-all number.
Or you could just watch the Sixers and be like, boy, they're better with Joel Embiid.
Sure.
Sure.
Wow, he really does a lot. Let's take a quick break. Let's take a break to talk about Belvedere. Oh, Belvedere. Produced in one of the world's longest running distilleries, Belvedere Vodka is the world's finest all-natural vodka. Crafted by a collective of master distillers, Belvedere is made with non-GMO Polish rye, pure water, no additives. Recognized for quality, Belvedere was named the ISC World Vodka Producer of the Year, 2015, 2016, and 2017. Belvedere's unparalleled quality is reminiscent of the king, aka LeBron James. His recent run, where he made the NBA Finals an astounding 7 straight times from 11 to 17, including 3 NBA Finals MVP awards. LeBron, whether with the Heat or the Cavs or next year the Sixers, always plays basketball of the utmost quality, just like Belvedere Vodka. Enjoy a delicious cocktail with Belvedere Vodka today, and remember to always drink responsibly. Is Joel Embiid, in your opinion, the most underrated star in basketball right now? Because it's you've been tweeting about him a lot.
I don't know if he's the most underrated. I don't know. I think, like, right now, Chris Paul's pretty underrated in terms of he's not getting
Chris Paul underrated again. I mean, he's back.
He didn't make the All-Star game.
Well, he missed like 19 games.
Sure. But the team is 30-1.
Yeah, that seems like a relevant stat. I like stats like that. Yeah. We're 30-1 when all of our guys play.
Not even all, just three.
Yeah.
Just Capella, Harden, and Paul. So I feel like he's not really getting enough credit. He's been ridiculously good.
Yeah.
So maybe him. I'm not sure. By the way, Simmons is underrated too.
Ben Simmons.
Like, Ben Simmons is.
I think I'm also underrated.
Yeah, you are.
I think both Simmons is underrated.
Bill and his son Ben are both underrated.
Well, the best thing that happened to him was not making the All-Star team.
Sure.
Because I
thought
he was kind of on autopilot a little bit, and then that happened, and he's like, boom.
Best thing that happened to him is he has no jump shot. So it's like, he has to do so much more to be good. Like, if he ever did develop a jump shot, or if he could shoot, I don't think he would be nearly as good.
So you think this is Jason Kidd syndrome?
Wow.
This is an incredible.
It's almost like when a guy breaks, you know, you're in high school and a guy breaks his arm, his right hand.
Right, and he gets
gets really good with his left hand because he's got nothing else to do.
This was Jason Kidd for nine, 10 years when he couldn't shoot, but he made up for it with all the other stuff he did.
But it'll be interesting to see him in the playoffs. When teams
just
attack that, they're just going to lay 5 feet off.
He's going to be 5 feet off.
Like, okay,
that doesn't work though.
Does it not work?
No, it doesn't work because it works when you have a guy who can't drive.
Hold on, Andre Robertson's here. He disagrees with you.
Well, it works with that because Andre Robertson is never going to back someone down or take someone one on one. When you give someone like Ben Simmons 5 feet of space to accelerate,
he's just
going
to try
to
beat
you. He goes right by you.
Yeah,
and it also makes it easier to pass. Teams did that I remember the Lakers thought this was like a great strategy versus Rondo, where they would just lay off him. And Rondo's just sitting there just picking. The guys are coming, especially if they're running floppy sets. Guys are just coming off of screens. And now he's got like 5 feet to just sit there, no pressure to make as many passes.
Rondo's a good example. He figured out how to impact the game. And it's like, I'm just going to go on the baseline.
And Rondo was the beast in the post who could just back you down. Now you have to send someone at. Now you're double team. Now he's kicking the ball. They added Bellinelli, who can shoot also.
We've always liked Bellinelli.
He's okay.
I was kind of hoping the Celtics would get him.
Yeah.
He's had a couple of really interesting statistical seasons over the last couple of years.
Remember him at Summer League that one year when he was a rookie where he shot like 60% from three or something. Everyone thought he was like the greatest 3-point shooter of all time.
He's definitely one of the best. I don't give a shit. I'm not nervous. I don't care how many people are watching this playoff game, guys. He just come in and be like, I'm Marco Bellinelli. I'm just going
to
make
some
threes. The
history of Italian players in the NBA is a interesting one, to say the least.
Yeah, but even Bargnani, who I think is maligned now, is a complete bust. I don't think he was a complete bust.
He was a complete bust.
No, he averaged 20 a game 1 year. He played with a little oomph, though,
he was
for
terrible.
Somebody who wasn't good.
I think he was so maligned and he started feeling like really
bad
about it.
Really terrible.
I just think anyone who averages 20 points a game in an NBA season cannot be considered a complete bust.
That was only his first season, though, wasn't it? It was
the
second season. Gallinari is the one that I'd, like, if not for the injuries, who I'd
Yeah, Gallinari had it going. He always looked like they just like rolled out of bed and they're about to make it. Like he just came to the social club and now they're going to make you a cappuccino or something like that.
It's
like, it reminds me, because my dad used to have a social club growing up, like a place where people played cards. It wasn't Italian, but it was Greek, which was a lot of Italians there. And there was a guy who worked for him and his job was just to basically, you know, make food or make coffee. And he always looked like he just rolled out of bed. Yeah. That's what Marco Bellinelli looks like. He looks like he just rolled out of bed. He's kind of showed up to the game.
Teodosic would have been a good Italian.
Oh my God, yeah.
I mean, he looks like that, Teodosic. He looks like that all the time.
He's right across the Adriatic there.
Yeah.
Hey, if you were the Philly GM, what type of player would you sign to put with Simmons and Embiid? Because they're going to have a ton of cap space this summer. Who would be your perfect third wheel for that team? What would you do?
I mean, I don't know. It depends. I mean, I would. That's a team I would like LeBron to go to. Like, everyone's like, "Whoa, LeBron."
That's what I wrote on Friday. Yeah. It's the logical LeBron choice.
I don't
just
think
hope
he will,
Embiid stays healthy.
But I would say that would be the most. So I'm not sure what they'll do. I feel like they think they need to get shooting around them. Like that's why they're kind of signed Redick to that contract.
But that's done in a year. I mean, that's done at the end of the year.
Yeah,
when you're 23. What if they had LeBron and Paul George, as I theorized in my column on Friday?
Over. It's over for sure.
If Embiid stays on the court.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a great team. How the fuck the Warriors are going to, that little scrawny little group of Warriors.
Wow. What do you think of that theory, Jason? Because I think if LeBron, like looking at all the moves that he might have, that's the move that has the highest ceiling. Because if Embiid stays on the court, they actually could go head to head.
It's fascinating. I just think LeBron, everything we know about him and what we've seen, he likes guys that are just a little more tested than
and
than
older.
The
he wants to, he wants to roll with his crew.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons is in his clutch crew.
True, but
even though LeBron technically doesn't own any stake in clutch,
right?
It's just his good buddy.
The NBA has investigated this, by the way.
The NBA has a really rigorous investigation of this.
I can't see him going to Philadelphia. I think if he goes anywhere, he's going to go to Houston.
Really? See, I don't see that one at all.
Why? Got a little wine crew.
I think it makes him look weak.
Yeah, I don't think LeBron cares.
I don't think he noticed the Kevin Durant thing.
You don't think he noticed like all the shit Kevin Durant took?
Maybe, but he also noticed that when they faced him in the finals, that they barely won one game versus him. I don't think it matters. Rings is like kind of where this whole thing goes right now. Like, oh, we won a championship and do whatever it takes. I feel like you have half the league not trying, and the other half the league kind of, or I guess maybe like two or three teams who are actually able to compete. I mean, who can compete this year?
This
is Golden State and Houston, and that's it.
Yep.
You're hurting my feelings because I have my heart set on the Gordon Hayward comeback.
Yeah, that's insanity. I mean, even if he was healthy and 100%, that's not a very good team. That's just like that's a coach. That's like a Geppetto coach. He's like pulling all the little strings and he's making everyone look good, better than they are, but that's not sustainable.
How about all the guys that left Boston?
Sure.
It's a long list of people who miss Brad Stevens.
Yeah.
We're like, wow, I really enjoyed my time with Brad Stevens. Yeah. The real life sucks.
Look at Isaiah. I mean, Isaiah Thomas suffered an injury.
Yeah.
But the fact that he was able to, I mean, he completely in the playoffs got completely exposed, but that he was able to go past the Wizards. And with that
we should have lost that series in like five games.
Yeah. That was
your boy, Scotty Brooks.
That was
unbelievable. Played Kelly Oubre 3 minutes in game seven. My dad and I were like, this is amazing. I can't believe he's playing Kelly Oubre.
No,
went and like hug Scott Brooks at the end of that game.
I mean, I don't know. I guess whatever. But he had Jan Mahinmi playing big minutes when Olenek was
center. I love that as well.
Olenek was the center. Just like watching the threes go over his head. Like, dang, I'm waiting for him to come down here.
Well, either, you know, who's competing right now, who can compete is kind of part of the tanking conversation, because the incentive structure of the NBA right now is either create a super team or tank. There's very little room for like a middle path in the NBA right now.
I just want to say that this has been the case since, I mean, the 07 Celtics, you tweeted about this yesterday. I put a box score of the Celtics versus the Bucks in like April 07, which to me was like tanking perfection. The guys on the court, like Earl Boykin's playing 40 minutes.
Doc Rivers would be full court pressing when they were in the penalty with 9 minutes left.
You remember this. You were gambling that year.
Yeah.
Paul Pierce was completely healthy. They kept him on the bench. So this is going on forever. But I do think like you made a really interesting point about if they do have legalized gambling.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the NBA gets a cut from that. And you have seven or eight teams basically throwing games,
owners
like what
saying
Dallas
we're
is
trying,
doing,
yeah.
Or Dallas admitting they're doing it. Like, how do you gamble on that?
It's weird. It's interesting. Like, Yeah, I don't. The integrity fee is like, what are you? What are you trying to prevent people from fixing games by actually like colluding with gamblers, or are you just trying to prevent teams from fixing games because they're trying to lose so they can draft the better player?
Like imagine boxing and MMA if it was like, yeah, UFC's tonight. Two of the fighters are probably going to tank. Here are the odds.
This happens in like Olympics and World Cup matches. Maybe not World Cup, but Olympics for sure matches where teams want to lose to get into the other side of the draw.
Yeah.
And there's been situations where teams have gotten, or countries have gotten into a lot of trouble because they've purposely lost in order to get to the other side of the draw or to have like a more advantageous draw. And I feel like that's kind of not, you know, people aren't really doing that, but they're just losing on purpose.
Well, you remember the Mark Madsen game.
I was going to say, that was the most disgusting
Do you think that could be a documentary?
Mark Madsen shooting nine threes.
Yeah, in overtime game too. Shooting nine threes. The other one was there was one where I believe Golden State played. I think maybe
Harrison Barnes.
They played six players the entire game.
I wrote about this in my book that the team that created tanking was Houston during one of the Samson Olajuwon years, where they had Elvin Hayes on the team who was just washed at that point. He was like 40.
Yeah.
And they had like a double overtime game and he played every minute. And they were just like, Elvin, take us home. Elvin's like in a wheelchair.
Part of the reason we're so focused on tanking now is there's just much more attention on the league, one. And an understanding.
Every game is televised.
Yeah, every game is televised. The audience at large has a better understanding of the game than ever. The random fan understands the tanking, the incentive structure of the NBA promotes tanking. They understand this works. They've seen it work, right? Yeah. I mean, they've seen Philly climb out of the cellar, have a bunch of great young players. They understand that this works. And also, there's very few dumb executives anymore, or there's fewest that's been in a while.
I think there's some executives who would love to argue with that.
I agree with that. But if you look at the teams that are playing well, like these are all smart guys and they're all doing the same kind of thing.
So you're saying we've reached peak tanking.
I think it's that they realize they can't compete. And they don't want to look stupid. And so now it's, okay, why would we try? Let me just go the other route and see what and try to lose on purpose.
Knicks fans are roasting the Knicks for not tanking more aggressively right now. Yeah. It's crazy.
I think Jason's right. Peak tanking combined with a sophistication with the fan bases combined with it worked with Philly.
Right.
Yeah.
I think what's changed now, because I think we've had this for almost 35 years at this point. What's changed now is how early teams are doing it.
It's absurd.
It feels like Dallas has been doing it all year. Like they weren't like, hey, let's see if we can make a run, and in February
Phoenix
we'll flip
as well. Yeah. The point, I think the big part is like media kind of drives a narrative, what people pay attention to. Back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you would just read a newspaper. You'd read about the games. You wouldn't know that these teams are losing. Their games might have been, maybe you had it.
Wouldn't know it 11 years ago. Yeah. Like when the Celtics were doing that stuff, I was writing about it, but it wasn't social media every day talking about it.
Now it's just, there's so many people writing and talking about the NBA all the time, in real time, in most cases, on Twitter. And so people pay more attention, so it snowballs. And the league has a big problem. It's not just that the teams, I mean, there was back in the day, the Shaq, Kobe days, that was like the team that really was probably the only team that could win as well. And so they would play like the New Jersey Nets in the finals, and it was a joke. And so there was a situation where you had a super team that was much better than the rest of the league, and it didn't seem as bad. But the problem then is that it was a team that kind of happened on its own. It wasn't as though players conspired to create this super team. One guy left, you know, Kevin Durant leaves Oklahoma City after they lose in seven games. So it's more of like now the players themselves have some more power to form these teams.
Yeah.
And the executives are trying to combat that by trying to rebuild and have control by having the younger players on the contracts. That's really the only way to acquire a superstar, short of being part of like this little cadre of players who are trying to create super teams together.
Tell Jason your theory of what they should do with rookies.
Not just rookies. I think that there shouldn't be a draft. I feel like.
So no draft.
No draft.
ESPN's already devastated. They're like, we love the draft. We had 7 million
Not
people.
Not just no draft, a hard cap that can't be exceeded in any way.
Can't exceed it by $1.
Not by $1. And every player, there is no max contract. So you have $100 million for your cap. And if you want to sign LeBron to 85 and try to fill out the rest of your roster with 15, God bless you. And I feel like that.
How would the Knicks screw this up, Jason? Porzingis gets $100 million and then all minimums?
They would absolutely figure out a way to do it. Yeah, it's $115 million for Porzingis, and then he gets hurt like he did this season.
So you could conceivably, with the amount of money they're spending on salaries, because the cap's like what, like 103 or something, but it's really way more than that. Like OKC's spending 130.
Yeah, so whatever the cap is, the hard number.
So we could say it's 120 hard cap, and you can't go one dime over it.
Correct.
I mean, short of something radical that really tears up the structure of the NBA, I don't know how you do anything about tanking. Like, really, the league's solution to tanking right now is just don't talk about it. Right. Don't admit it.
Well, actually,
and that's always been their solution, is like, just don't admit.
So
that
let's
this
say
is
if you didn't want to do that, you said you didn't want to have the, you know, everyone's a free agent, rookies, whatever. So what you probably should do is you could do the wheel thing that Mike Zarin did, where every team rotates a draft position. But I feel like that's a little too nerdy, even for me, and I'm a pretty big nerd. I feel like that's a little bit too nerdy, like the wheel. People won't understand what's going on. What do you mean we don't have the number one pick for 3 years? What is going on? And then you'd have players, college players, who could actually decide when to come out, not to based on who predetermined.
Yeah, I don't love that.
That's going to happen at some point.
Yeah. So what I think they should do is the seventh and eighth teams, and all the teams that don't make the playoffs, have an equal chance at a lottery pick. And it's all lottery, and it's a draft. It's just a complete random selection.
Why can't we do it so that if you're in the top four, you don't get to be in the top four again for 3 years?
I don't like that either. I think that.
But why reward a team like Phoenix that's just been a shit show for five straight years?
Yeah,
why do they get to be in the lottery again?
But they're still going to have teams that are going to tank 1 year because now they know there's 3 years that were in the bottom. They got their picks, and so now let's tank. This is our year to tank. So I think just having it so that you shouldn't be, first of all, why do you need to be rewarded? The idea before was that, okay, we had to equally distribute the talent among the league, but that's not happening. It doesn't matter. The bad teams are still bad. They're always going to be bad. The rookie contracts, it's not like a rookie can't leave after a second contract anyways and go someplace else. It's not, all it does is really allow you to have control over a pro for a short period of time. It's not like you have them forever. It's not going to revitalize your franchise. And it just sets your fan base back. Like, aside from Philadelphia, who really, really loved what was going on with the process.
But they're
turned into like a
they're
Scientology
weirdos.
Thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me just say one thing.
Like the dude who tattooed the Sam Hinkie
Sloan
thing?
Sloan is an extremely staid and serious affair. The only person that got applause when they were introduced before, you know, like as the people were coming out for the panels is Sam Hinkie. And this is like, you know, Steve Nash is there. Chris Bosh is there. Sam Hinkie got applause when
That's
he came
awesome.
Out. It was wild.
Yeah.
Sam Hinkie is
in
like
Boston.
Is like Nerdvana.
Yes.
He's it. I used to call Daryl Dork Elvis. I don't know what Sam Hinkie is.
He's like Dork Jim Morrison.
He really is. And what's funny is he didn't, if he had totally committed to whatever that plan was, then he also should have taken Giannis over MCW.
I mean, the thing about, they didn't draft perfectly well. It's not like he was like this great.
And Okafor.
No one does.
Porzingis
they should have taken
over
Porzingis.
Okafor.
Yeah, Porzingis is
because if you're just going full high ceiling, high variation.
The greatest thing that he did was he realizes that this is a lottery,
right?
And there's really no distance out of having as many tickets as possible.
Right. His trades were great. It was like very Belichick-esque.
It was
like
also
kept
just
adding assets.
He knew what he knew in the sense that nobody can evaluate these 18 to 20 year old players perfectly.
Right.
So you just want as many shots as possible. The problem with what he did was he alienated the media, which is what you don't want to do by
and
not wanting to
talk. And
he
alienated the other GMs, and Adam Silver got mad.
And the agents.
Began, yeah.
And it was kind of smart because, like, as a gambler, I feel like if you know something, you don't want to tell everyone about what you know. And so he was really quiet about what his theories were in terms of he didn't do a lot of publicity. And that's really smart. But having that type of job is such of, like, that's why you have so many former agents getting into it now. Because it's like a smarmy handshake, wink, wink type of business. You need to have like relationships. You need to do all these other things. You can't just be the guy in the back with a bunch of spreadsheets.
Seeing him at Sloan, like in his element, working the hallways, talking to people at the panels, I think that was a big mistake, is not talking to the media more. He is very engaging.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's,
big time.
Yeah,
Southern
he's
accent.
Not like this. You have this picture of him, I think, from the process and the fact that he was so quiet as this person who's this really nerdy guy, and he's not.
No.
He's very engaging, very charming guy, like fun to listen to him talk. He just should have talked to the press more.
Yeah.
Mm. Last thing quickly, and then we're bringing Justin Verrier in. If they did the, Zach wrote about a modified play-in thing. I had the whole thing where everybody was in it that I've been writing about for since whenever. This one was just 7 versus 10, 8 versus 9 in each conference. So basically 4 playoff games for those 4 teams. And then everyone else is in the lottery. If we did it that way, it would lead to 10 teams that were basically the lottery teams that aren't involved in the playoffs in any way. I think it's 10. What if we just had a lottery for, what if you did the play-in games and then you had a lottery for those 10, everybody gets an equal chance.
Yeah,
you can't be in the top 3 twice.
Well, I don't even think, I think you can be in the top 3 twice because it's just random. I feel like that's fine. I don't think there should be any.
So you wouldn't put any restrictions?
Right. No, because why would you ever tank to avoid getting in the playoffs if you just had like a 1 in 10 chance of getting
Because I think the incentive of, I think fans would get mad if their team could have made that play-in game. Well, I don't know, actually. Maybe fans are too smart now. If you're a Knicks fan and Porzingis was healthy and you could get the 10 seed to be in this play-in game and potentially get your ass kicked by Toronto.
Well, maybe the better one is the West, where you're going to play the Golden State Warriors in the first round. It's like, do you really want to play Golden State?
Yeah, fuck those guys. I think they're beatable.
I mean, that's the thing, like, especially in the West, like, three and down, you're just like, I want to get in the lottery. Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know what the point is? Competition.
That is the point. That's the point of the game. You play to win the game.
Being a freaking man for once.
You play to win the game. You remember? What was that?
Yeah.
What
do you do this for?
You play to win the game. Yeah.
Come on.
That's not true in the NBA anymore. They don't have the you play to win the game anymore. It's like, oh, we need to get more draft slots.
Yeah.
Jason, thank you.
Thank you.
Bringing Justin in right after this break. One more break to tell you about NBA Desktop with Jason Concepcion, who was on this podcast. We put this up usually Friday mornings. In my opinion, it is everything I want from an internet show. It feels like it's made for the internet. It's not a TV show that looks like a TV show but got thrown on the internet. This is an internet show. I would compare it to Talk Soup crossed with the NBA. Jason rips through all the storylines that we care about at The Ringer. Stuff like, locker room fights, some disrespectful dunk, some sort of Twitter diss, somebody in The Ringer Slack who had the hottest take of all time. He brings staffers in, brings random people in, and we just ripped through the league in 7 minutes. It's really cool. The audience has grown for this. The feedback's been fantastic. You can find it on The Ringer's YouTube page. You can find it on Facebook Watch. You can find it on our Twitter, @Ringer. And it's good stuff. Check it out. I promise you will like this. Or your money back, even though it's free. I promise you will like it. NBA Desktop, hosted by Jason Concepcion. A lot of rumors that we're going to 2 episodes a week soon. If it doesn't kill Jason Gallagher first, it might. We feed him a lot of coffee. He's the one who produces NBA Desktop. Shout out to him. NBA Desktop, check it out. All right, Justin Verrier is here from theringer.com. Bob's still here. Justin covered Davis for a couple years in New Orleans. New Orleans' season ended when Boogie Cousins went down with the Achilles injury, or so we thought, because New Orleans is still hanging around. And Davis has been unbelievable. And we are reaching this point now where, you know, I love history. I loved when I wrote my book, the first team All-NBA, stuff like that. I don't want to have the MVP race conversation yet. But I love, first team All-NBA is a reflection of, all right, who are the five guys that mattered the most? Now, this year we have, for first team All-NBA, the front court, which you get three spots. Davis, LeBron, Durant, Giannis. Pretty fascinating. Now, you could conceivably push Giannis to a guard. I don't see any scenario where Davis is not one of the top five players in the league right now. And what he's doing, like what I watched last night, what I've seen in some of these other games, I'm like, holy shit, is he the best player in the league? So what do you think first, Justin?
It really kind of depends on what we're categorizing him as. And that's the whole problem with all NBA is that they still kind of push guys into positions. They still have a center slot.
I hate that.
Yeah, I don't really get it. And with All-Star, it's the same thing. We're all talking about how the NBA is positionalist now, and I don't see why the way we honor these guys is just so stringent and so structured.
So you would get rid of the positions completely.
Yeah, I would say just top five guys.
I still like to have my fake team. Yeah. Like, I like having a point guard, and I like having somebody who can protect the rim in this conceivable basketball situation. And then I think the other three spots are wide open. But you could argue that Giannis could be the rim protector.
Oh yeah.
In whatever situation. Davis certainly could.
Why would LeBron be in the top five in that? Like, why would you put him over those guys?
That's the question.
I wouldn't. I'm not sure.
I would. Not this year. I mean, he's great.
This is the conversation I wanted to have, because when you talk about LeBron and you don't say he's the greatest player in the league, there's a certain segment of the NBA internet that is just,
I mean, he probably is the greatest player in the league.
I think his ceiling's the highest.
It's a regular season award, and his team hasn't necessarily performed that well. And he's had games where he just hasn't played that well.
He checked out for a couple weeks. He's been
playing
lately.
40 minutes a game for 10 years now. It's like absolutely ridiculous.
It's like 15 years.
Yeah. I don't
think defensively, I never thought he was like the best player in the league defensively or anything, but when he wanted to be, he could be impactful. And
I mean, in
now
the playoffs,
he's more,
sure.
In the playoffs he is, but during the regular season, he is just not impactful.
No, because he's smart. He understands the race. He knows what's going on. He's trying to pace himself. He's not trying to win every minute of every game. And I mean, the guy never gets injured. There's a reason for that. He's probably a freak. And also,
I think
he paces himself very well.
Well, like he sprained his ankle like 3 weeks ago in one of those national TV games. And he was like, wow, that was really bad. And then he just came back like 10 minutes later. His ankle regenerated itself on the sidelines. What's your top five right now? Where does Davis rank?
Yeah, I would probably put him in the top five. The real question is whether you want Giannis or you want LeBron in that conversation.
So you think Davis, Durant, Harden, who are we missing?
Steph.
Curry.
Steph, who will have enough games by the end of the year to have an all NBA, I would say.
Yeah, and then Embiid, maybe if we're saying it needs to be a traditional center. The case for Davis last year is he played more center than power forward. Now this year, because he played so many minutes with Boogie, he was theoretically the power forward. And then you get into the whole Dicey conversation. Well, yeah. What is a power forward? What is a center in that lineup anyway?
He hates playing the center.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Which is why they're starting Emeka Okafor sometimes next to him. And they signed him for the rest of the season.
Who knew he was still in shape?
I was at pretty my impressive junior prom in 2004 when they beat Duke.
Yeah,
to make it to the championship game against Georgia Tech.
The same year as he was like, the people couldn't decide between him or Dwight.
That was one of my darkest page two archive moments.
No, you weren't sure.
I was Team Okafor.
Yeah,
in that
same
argument. I get in trouble anytime high school guys.
You might win that one in the long run. Yeah,
with New Orleans.
But the defensive thing is interesting too. I think it comes down to defense and winning. And you look at AD since Boogie's been down. The defense has been very good. They're playing at a really high pace, and they're barely sticking in some of these games. So I wonder if there's a course correction coming for AD specifically. You look at the team, it's very reminiscent of 2014-15 when his rise kind of began, where it was basically you have shooters and you have enough around him to almost feature him and let him be the best guy on the court, top five guy in the court. With LeBron, as you mentioned, the defense isn't there. And Giannis, even though the Bucks' defense isn't great, he's still probably the best defender on that team. Maybe Bledsoe?
No, he's the best defender.
So, and he really unlocks them, and you expect in the playoffs he's going to play more five.
Yep.
Or one five.
One of the things I like about this stretch run, first of all, the seeds are in doubt, which will be fun, like especially the home court stuff like that. But also, like, I don't feel like any of the award stuff settled. I think Harden is, you know, I hate talking about the MVP until we get to like 12, 15 games left, but I think Harden's in pole position right now. But the door is still open for somebody to go off down the stretch here and go nuts. And there's like five different candidates. What I'm seeing from Davis, I always thought it would be impossible to really fully keep track of this stat in the right way, but I wish it existed anyway. Just games where somebody just destroys the other team. It should have like its own name. And Davis has had like 15 of those this year where he's just like, oh, Anthony Davis had 45 points, 17 rebounds, and five blocks, and made the last three shots of the game.
Yep.
There should be some stat that captures that, because I swear he would be leading the league in whatever that stat is, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Him and Giannis, I think. Giannis has had just games where it's like, holy fucking shit. What, Jesus Christ? How do you stop this guy?
Yeah.
LeBron, since the trades, he'll have quarters like that, but I think he's too smart now. He knows he doesn't have to. It's usually younger guys who have those games where they're like, I'm in Charlotte. I liked Larry Johnson when I was a kid. I'm going to destroy them.
Right.
And, so anyway.
And AD's what, 24? We forget in the big unicorn race that he was kind of the original guy, but he's still just as young as any of these guys.
He needs to get a real head coach and get to like a team with like.
Well, that's why one of the reasons I want to bring Justin in. So Justin was there. I mean, top three worst ownership, right? And now the owner's in the hospital. But I mean, even the last couple of years, he was really getting on in age, and it was kind of this team they owned just because they owned the football team.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a hot mess. They did some of the dumbest contracts we've seen this decade. Like when they re-signed Omer Asik, I'm just like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like that guy's, just get out of that. And then some of the role players they overpaid. And you watch them now, it's unfair because Boogie's out. But at the same time, like when Etuan Moore is your fourth best guy in the court, right, like you've had some roster negligence.
Sure.
You know? And if I was him, at some point you got to look around and go,
what am I doing?
Nobody knows that I'm one of the best players in basketball.
Yeah, he's completely hidden. No one talks about him at all. What he's doing is absolutely ridiculous. And nobody pays attention because their games are always boring.
But what's weird is people pay attention to Giannis, it's not like Giannis is in like fantastically better situation.
He's new.
It's new. And Davis had like some injuries, so you kind of forget about him a little bit.
Right. And there was at the beginning of the season, there's a little buzz when the injuries really, he had two more.
He goes out almost every other game with something. Yeah. I get like an alert, like Anthony Davis has left the
game. Well, and it became like, well, what is this guy? I remember I was on the Ringer NBA show a few months ago and I was like, I love this Celtics team. I don't want to spend our entire future rolling the dice and hoping Anthony Davis can stay in the court for 4 years. But now when you watch him these last 2 months, I'm like, oh, I'm an idiot. Yeah, we should totally do everything we can to trade for Anthony Davis.
He's a lot bigger. Like even than last year and the year before, he's completely
he's bulked up for sure.
Yeah, he's a center, whether he will admit it or not.
Especially in today's NBA.
Right. And you look at what they've pieced around him just since Boogie went down, and it's basically, they're more conventional, so I think their ceiling is lower. I don't think like in the Warriors would be afraid of them in a playoff series because they don't have Cousins to kind of throw in that wrinkle.
I think have been a little afraid of them if Cousins was Cousins, right?
Yeah. But right now they're basically just a really good small ball team where Nico kind of stretches the floor next to Davis and they can put up 120 on every night. And that's basically what they've been doing. They've been winning.
Rondo's actually played really well. Rondo's
been good.
Team. Yeah.
At times.
He's been, for what we thought his career was.
Right. Well, I thought he was
crunch time. And he makes like yesterday, he made the key play of the game, which won't really show up on the box score, but they missed a shot and he was like in traffic and batted it back. It was like a classic, like
think about him,
stupid Rondo player that works.
Definitely do shoot better when they receive a pass from him.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not like a huge amount, but enough where it's noticeable because I watch someone like him throw passes and it's right in the pocket every time, or Chris Paul does that too. Harden does that. And then you watch some other point guards who Kyrie's like that. Like watch Kyrie throw a pass to someone.
He's just learning how to make the cross court skip pass.
The guy has to reach down to his kneecaps to get the ball or reach up to his shoulders. It never gets the guy in rhythm. The guy comes off the turn, like comes off a curl, and now he's got to wait a split second to get the pass before he gets there. It's just, there is a big difference between that. And Rondo's like the ultimate assist whore. But he also passes really, really well. He's the ultimate assist.
Drew has benefited a lot from that.
Drew's been fantastic.
He's getting the ball right in the pocket every time, right when he comes off, right when he's perfectly in motion. He doesn't have to stop.
They should trade him right now. I guess they can. They have to wait. If he played four straight in Drew 3 months, I would be trading him. I watched Bird and McHale. The NBA TV's doing these weird interviews with, they put these people who used to play together and they have these sit downs. To mixed results so far. Bird McHale, it could have been so much better, but there was a great part where they were talking about passing and McHale was talking about how Bird, when they played together, he always knew exactly where to give McHale the ball. And he was like, you'd give me like, sometimes the pass would be so I was already spinning around for my shot and the ball would be there. And then Bird started talking about it. It's like, yeah, you know, Chief liked it over here and does this like 2 minute soliloquy. And I was watching that thinking like, I wish Kyrie would watch this.
Yeah.
I wish Kyrie knew where Jason Tatum really loved the ball. Cause I'm not positive he knows.
Yeah.
What they have, I think it just works. And it speaks to like the combination that they kind of, the one thing they got right, even though they paid a premium for it, was to pair AD with a point guard like Drew. I think last year, even though Drew missed a few games earlier in the season because of his wife's situation, they were slightly above 500 team. With those two guys on the floor.
I think
that's essentially what you're getting now.
I think they got the Meritage trade right.
Yeah.
I like that trade. And they got rid of a bad contract, gave up a first round pick, but I think they're going to make the playoffs. And I don't know. I just like him. I think he's good. I think he's good at basketball.
Yeah.
I don't think he's an all-star, but even in a game yesterday, I think he went like 1 for 8, but he's still like, he's in the mix. He's doing stuff. And he's a guy you can go to war with in a playoff game.
This team definitely looks more like an Alvin Gentry team. Now you can argue like whether or not that's the best thing for what they do and for
not one
for
of your AD, favorites. But.
I mean, I don't know. He's I think
I liked him in 2010. Thought he did a good job with the Nash teams.
Yeah,
although we could have been coaching those Nash teams.
Yeah, I think like he's just an example of someone who has had some success having an offensive system, but that system hasn't necessarily succeeded without a really good point guard.
You had a tweet about five coaches matter, five coaches are terrible, and all the other 20 are in the middle, which I completely agreed with.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I have five coaches that matter. I might have four.
Yeah, I only
mentioned. Who are your five?
So, well, I have four. Well, I have five. My five would be everyone likes Pop. So Pop, Spo, Stevens, Rick Carlisle, and I can't remember who the other one
is. Not Steve Kerr?
He's not a bad coach, but
Shots fired.
I mean, Luke Walton led that team to like 20 something in a row or something.
Yeah,
like
that did hurt the Steve Kerr legs.
So, but I mean, but Steve Kerr installed the system. It's just, I just get the idea that like a coach, so like, you know, they didn't really realize that they could run like a Durant Curry pick and roll. Like, so like, and maybe you could say they were high
until
waiting
the
that
finals.
They're waiting for like, so the right time to like unleash it on. But I think that's bullshit. Teams don't do that. Teams aren't really hiding things for the playoffs.
I liked how they moved it to the side.
Sure.
They did add some wrinkles as the playoffs went on.
I mean, Kerr's probably a great coach. He just hasn't had to show he's a great coach because he's got like an all-time great team. And look, the first year he coached the team, he took him to the finals and won. So yeah, he probably is in there.
Rick Carlisle, his greatest coaching job is right now where...
That team just, actually is trying. Like that, you can,
that
you
team
can
plays
say,
really well for 42 minutes and then makes the two or three plays it needs to lose.
I don't know that the coach is actually trying. Like I get what everyone's saying, but like, I don't know, I watch that team play and there's some nights when like Kyle Collinsworth is playing and there's all these weird players who are playing, but there's other nights where you can see like they are irritated and he's coaching and they're trying to win. Like, I don't know if it came because after, you know, the fine from the owner, I'm not sure exactly if that's what it was. Cause I don't really, you know, I'm not necessarily watching all of their games like with like fervor intensity or whatever. But yeah, I don't know.
Is there anyone overachieving to you other than Spo, who seems to overachieve every year?
Coaching wise?
Yeah.
Casey? Like, they've done a good job this year for sure. They've changed the way they play. They've gone from like heavy ISOs to really trying to move the ball a little bit more. They developed an amazing bench. Fact, they're like one of the only, they remind me a lot of the Spurs team that won the second time versus Miami.
We didn't like Dwayne Casey for a while.
Think about these coaches. I feel like I have to
delete some tweets from 2012.
But they get better. Like they do. They improve. The ones who don't improve.
Doc Rivers is a great example. He was terrible the first few years.
Yeah.
And he got better.
Yeah. So they do get better. I mean, they're human beings. They learn stuff. But like, I don't know. There's just some coaches where I just feel they don't really, you know, they're not like Jason Kidd just wasn't aware of like what he was doing. Like they're just some basic math, like, oh, like we're down. Like he told a player to unintentionally miss a free throw because he didn't want to, like, they were up three and he didn't want to like foul him on a 4-point play, like on the next possession, just like stuff like that. Like that, he actually said that.
Yeah. Like, it sounded like he was trying to get fired when he did that.
When your own player calls you out for getting math wrong, I think that's the time you have to start questioning.
He was really bad.
Credit.
I also didn't, the way they ran their defense stuff was
their
really
defense
strange.
Was ridiculous.
It was just like nobody else in the league was doing it, which is probably a bad sign.
That's the type of thing that works for a while until teams look at the film and be like, oh, you mean if we just make one extra pass, we get a wide open corner 3-point shot every time.
Yeah.
Okay, let's try that. And then they still did it over and over and over again. They would do things like blitz ball handlers who really had no business you would ever blitz them because they can't shoot. And now they're just, oh, now it's passing to a guy who actually can shoot wide open from three. They just did a bunch of stuff that was really dumb.
Any sleepers for you right now, playoff wise? Anyone that you're eyeballing?
Where are we on the Jazz?
See, I don't like the way they play either. I don't think that they are maximizing. Like, so they lucked into the idea of playing small when Gobert went out and stretching the floor and playing fast and moving the ball. And then Gobert came back and then they went right back to playing.
Yeah.
Although they started staggering him a little more, but they went back to starting Favors. And then they have a super ridiculous athletic front line in terms of when they do play those two guys. They play like this really, really... So they played, the perfect example is they played Portland one game in Portland, came back and won because they switched up their defense and started like blitzing the pick and roll. And it just completely flummoxed Lillard and McCollum. They couldn't do anything. And then they played them again after the break. And they went back to playing this really passive vanilla soft defense where Gobert just lays all the way back into the lane. And now McCollum come off the screen and just shoot a three. Lillard comes off the screen and shoots a three. And I just feel like that's just bad coaching. I feel as though you did something that worked. Are you not aware that you did something that worked? That's why you came back and won the game.
So Quinn's in the middle 20 for
it's hard. Power. These guys are doing a lot of stuff. I feel like maybe it's just hard to be an NBA coach. But to me, that was like a glaring example of like, okay, did you not watch what was working for you last time? Every game is important. So you can't say that they're just like taking a few games off. They're trying to make the playoffs. Every game is important. They do a lot of weird things like, I don't know. They do a lot of weird things in terms of like when they play Jarebko and when they don't play Jarebko.
Swedish bird.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a weird, they have those two big guys and they never crash the glass ever. It's like, okay, I'm going to play Gobert in Favors. I'm just going to have them just hightail it back and deep on defense every time. What's the point? Why play them at all then?
My two teams in the East, I've been monitoring Washington.
Mm.
Cause
they're going to fuck it up though.
Well, that's the thing. But
you're
I'm monitoring
Scott
them.
Brooks in the playoffs trying to figure something out, and Mahini will come rolling out versus Kelly.
Well, that was the thing you saw on Thursday night. He had Mahini guarding LeBron. It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. Was, every time this is going to be a foul. Why are you doing this?
It's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable.
But I think Beal has a level that he might be able to go up in the playoffs. He's had moments. I find myself watching the Wiz because I really like watching Beal.
Yeah, he's an awesome
player. And if it's
player.
Like 4 minutes left, I just like seeing what he's going to do. He's just this old school two guard that can shoot from 25 and get to the rim when he wants. And
I think the wall injury has more to do with just the fact that Beal's getting more touches and the ball more.
I think it's
become... Than it is because, oh, Wall's this player who's... Because Wall does create a lot for that team, but it's just a lot more efficient when Beal is out there.
How about this? I like having both of them.
Yeah.
I think... Depending on the matchup, you can get in the lane with either. I think Oubre is a fucking gamer, man. Like, sure. And Porter's your fourth or fifth
awesome.
Best guy. Like, that's you're in good shape.
Everyone's trying to get wings in today's NBA, and they seem to have grown two of them.
So that's like, I've said he's a terrible in-game coach, but he quite clearly develops talent quite well.
Yeah.
And so that's a part of coaching.
Oklahoma City too.
Yeah, so that's a part of coaching. It's interesting, but when you watch the games, you're like, what is going on? Why is he playing these players?
Saransky.
And Saransky awesome.
Could be my point guard. I said he could be my point guard any day. He's awesome.
So that team, I'm watching them in the East because I just think there's another level they might be able to jump to, especially if Wall can go back.
Easton's fun.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm not giving up on OKC. All the signs say give up on them.
As an elite team?
Just as somebody that could do some damage in the playoffs potentially. I still think like...
It depends on where they match up.
Paul George, Westbrook, 40 minutes a game. Rest between every playoff game for one day. Yeah. And then they just need like just competency from like four other spots. I'm not even asking for like to kick ass. I'm not asking Carmelo to go off in the playoffs, but just be competent. Make a couple open shots.
If they could take away a bunch of the really, really bad twos that they take where they're just early for no reason and Melo takes them. George stopped taking him a little bit. Yeah. Westbrook takes him all the time.
I think Melo kills them. I tweeted about it a little this weekend. I think he's having a horrendous year. It really looks like a guy who's on his way out of the league. And the stats back it up.
I'm terrified of playoff Melo because he's the type of guy who probably thinks that he's going to take the reins and make a shot. And like,
terrified that he'll kill OKC? Yes. You're terrified?
Yeah, if I'm an OKC fan, I'm terrified that he's on side.
So if depending on where they match up on the, like, they should be one of the last four teams left in the West.
But what if they're the eighth seed? What if Golden State has to play them in round
one?
Then
they won't be, obviously, yeah. But if they can get a situation where they're playing any team other than
Golden
State,
I don't think Golden State wants to play them.
No. They always throw them off.
They have bad matchups, even though I know they blew them out on Saturday, but they blew them out because their bench played well for one of the few times in the last couple of months and they played good defense. But, you know, they don't really have an inner guard Westbrook. Adams goes to town on them.
Yep.
And Paul George is the best option you're going to have to at least make Durant work for shots.
Yep.
Same with Roberson. Golden State would beat them. But
same with Roberson too. Both those guys can really, they have a couple guys. That's why I like Houston a lot though, because Houston can throw Mbamute, Tucker, Ariza. Mm-hmm.
Tucker's a good one.
They have Paul to guard Curry. They have Ariza to guard Curry. They have just so many different options that they can just throw at at Golden State. And then they're going to do things that are smart. The only thing that kind of concerns me a little bit with Houston is like the success they're having is this ISO stuff that they're doing, which is really successful with switches. And I feel like against Golden State, getting a switch and getting Draymond Green or getting Kevin Durant and trying to ISO them isn't quite as good as it would be versus other teams. But the other part of the flip side of that is that if they get like a few Mark Davis playoff series where Mark Davis is the referee and call a foul every single time because he's always calling fouls for Harden. If you get a couple of those where now Durant's in a switch and he's guarding Harden, now Durant picks up some fouls or Draymond Green picks up some fouls, they have no depth in the front line. I feel like, and especially if the pace is high and there's a lot of possessions, there's more opportunities for fouls. I feel like Houston could beat them.
I think Mark Davis is my number one flip on the Celtics game at 4:30 West Coast time and like see the refs. I'm like, oh, fuck Mark Davis.
I'm not even saying he's a bad ref. Can I say it? He just loves calling the shit on the perimeter.
Mark Davis is the logical successor to Joey Crawford. You guys are here to watch me tonight.
Bennett Salvatore is a real one. But
Joey Crawford was like, hey, welcome everybody. Welcome 20,000 fans. I'm going to put on a refereeing show for you. It's like, we want to watch the players. No, we don't want to watch you, Joey Crawford.
I don't think Mark Davis is like that. I just think he has taken the points of emphasis where we got to really call it tight on the perimeter to make sure we give the players space when they come down on a jump shot. He calls that very carefully.
The points of emphasis of being a shitty ref.
Trying too hard.
Yeah.
I am not a
Mark
Davis.
Did you watch the game last night against Denver?
I did.
It was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. Every jump shot was a shooting foul. It was
Mark
insane.
Davis hates fun. Yeah. Last thing, and then we're gonna go. Cleveland, did you like the trades? Did you understand the internet after they won two straight games? People like, they fixed the Cavs. Kobe Altman, get his Hall of Fame plaque ready. It's like, can we wait like 10 games before we send Kobe Altman to the Hall of Fame? What do you think of the trades?
I mean, the trades were good. I do. Yeah.
You would have taken on that much more money and given up a first.
What does it matter? The team either has a chance to win a title or has a chance to keep LeBron.
Are those the two trades you would have made?
I don't know what else they could have done. So it's tricky to say. I think getting rid of Isaiah Thomas was like not like
paramount.
They would have poisoned them if they couldn't have traded him. They wanted to get rid of him so bad. And so they had to get rid of Isaiah, clearly. He was terrible on the court for them. And then he was, you know, holding press conferences.
I think they had to get rid of Dwayne Wade too.
And Wade was bad too for them.
Wade is now murdering the Miami season.
The fact that they signed those three players or got those three players, especially Wade, Jeff Green in the offseason and thought like, okay, these are the guys we're going to pair with LeBron. So you couldn't think of worse players to pair with LeBron.
Well, also like Wade, I really think hurt J.R. Smith. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that J.R. Smith started trying again the moment Dwayne Wade left.
I don't know anything about
that.
Because
he went into a funk the moment they signed Dwayne Wade. He was like in a four-week spiral.
Yeah, the biggest trade was to get those guys reactivated. They traded for early season LeBron. And like for the most part, he's been playing like that. But these guys are league average guys. And you're just assuming kind of like with Anthony Davis to tie this back to the first
thing. I would not have done the George Hill trade. I don't think he's an impact guy.
I like the Rodney Hood trade a lot.
If he can... You like the Rodney Hood part of the trade.
Yes.
Not George Hill, though.
I think the George Hill part is okay just because they finally have a point guard who can play some defense, which they need. Like, they need to have a point guard who can play
defense.
They have
a point guard who can go 1-for-9 in big games for them.
Yeah, he can do that, too.
Nance is the most interesting guy trade for just because he's like, he makes sense as a small ball five next to LeBron.
Yeah.
I like that trade because I like Nance and Clarkson as a once-a-week key check guy.
Sure.
And you get Isaiah Thomas off the team.
What's great about that trade is that you have like a bunch of players who look at LeBron with awe.
Yeah.
And it makes them want to, like, you just look at that bench and they're all just watching LeBron like my dog looks at me. Like, they're just like, wow, we get to play with LeBron. And so it creates like this energy. It makes LeBron want to play harder. It makes them want to play harder. They're having fun. So I do think that it didn't fix the team. It definitely gave them a chance to actually like have something special, some locker room camaraderie where people are really trying and they're happy to be there. So I do feel like, I don't know what other options they had, but the fact that they were able to get rid of Wade and Isaiah Thomas, like you said, and add a couple people who really seem like not just they want to be there, but they're ecstatic to be there.
That's how the Lakers big. Will look at LeBron next year. He's getting a preview of that.
Ah,
sure.
And then poor Miami got stuck with Wade. I don't think they had seen the game tapes.
Well, just
I
for
watched
the
game the other day. He took the last shot of the game. Did you see that?
It's ridiculous.
It was like, why is Wade taking the game-winning shot? What's going on here?
I don't know what they're trying to do. I don't know if they're trying to lose now as well, but it seems like it's so weird. They're not just letting him take the last shot in the game. They're like running the offense through.
And they're like, wow, his passing's really, really... It's like Dwayne Wade should be in the celebrity game. He shouldn't be in real games anymore.
All for that moment on Instagram where he came in and had the introduction off the bench that won his first game back. That was amazing. And honestly, like I felt something from that, but that's what they're paying for now.
Yeah.
Listen, I love Dwayne Wade. The 06 finals is unassailable. His 09 season was one of the greatest seasons in the history of the two guard position. Incredible 10-year run, but it's been over for like 2 years.
Yeah.
And you cannot win if that guy is one of your crunch time dudes. Mm-hmm. But what's weird is I liked Miami's team and it feels like he might swing their season with they had this weird team of just like, you never knew who the heat check guy was going to be, but everybody played hard and they played matchups really well.
Yeah.
And there's no good matchup for Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
I just don't see it.
I mean, the door is open for Detroit. I mean, Miami's lost what? I think like 8 of their past 10 or something crazy.
I think he's going to kill them and they're going to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, but I just saw Detroit lose to Charlotte. Got blown off the floor by Charlotte.
Well, it looks like Blake already looks unhappy.
Oh,
Detroit
yeah.
hasn't won a game that where they haven't played a team in a back-to-back.
But isn't there another team that could sneak in there?
Charlotte is right after
that
Detroit.
That's terrible too.
Yeah.
There's four teams in the East that are kind of fun to watch and you kind of watch them play. Like Washington's one of them. Toronto's one of them. Cleveland, Boston. I don't think there's any more. Is there any more?
I thought it was Detroit, Miami. There's two spots. Detroit, Miami, Philly. And then there was a
Philly's
fourth team.
Philly's fun to watch.
Yeah. Philly's definitely making the playoffs.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. I don't know if they're definitely making it. They got blown out last
night. I had one of my worst over-under bets ever, Bob. Joe Haas is still pissed about it. We did under for Philly 42.5.
Oh, with that's the thinking, high though.
It was too high, and we were like, "Embiid's not playing 55 games. Get the fuck out of here!" And he's already at like 46.
Yeah. What are they like? 30,
they're like 29, four games under
29. We need something.
We need an Embiid pulled hamstring like pretty soon if we're gonna hit something. That. Because when he's not out there, they could lose every game.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't know. Isaac, will you look up the standings? Because we're forgetting somebody.
So the sixth seed is Milwaukee, 7 Philly, 8 Miami, Detroit, and Charlotte. Yeah. New York's tanking. So
Charlotte's the one that really blew this.
Yeah.
Because I think they have talent. They got Kemba. I was obviously wrong. I went into the season thinking they have all these weird pieces that I kind of like.
They thought Malik Monk was going to be good. Like they never watched him play in the playoffs.
The Dwight Bola virus.
Just why would they sign Dwight Howard? Play him that many minutes.
Then, did you think he was the MVP that year? When? I think that was Zach's 2010 vote or 2011, the Derrick Rose year.
Yeah, over Rose, I would have picked Dwight that year.
I just couldn't do it. I couldn't ever get there with Dwight. I didn't want to live in the world where he was the most valuable player of a basketball season. Yeah, I never believed.
He was big with the stat heads, I think, that year. It was also a weird year. It probably all those MVPs should have gone to LeBron, most likely.
But he was like a show. I don't know. I'm still fine with the Derrick Rose MVP. I have no idea how that team won 62 games.
The problem with that season was it was all the defense, and Rose was like the only offense they had. So it wasn't like he wasn't the best part of them. Like they won based on defense, and he was their worst defender.
Rose's legacy now is being hurt by these last few years, and people forget like him and Westbrook were equals athletically and from a going to a basket standpoint. It was basically like if Westbrook had gotten hurt 6 years ago and Westbrook never happened from that point on. I think Rose would have been as good as Westbrook.
Some of the best highlight dunks. When you look back at those old clips, he's amazing. The way he just like springs up out of nowhere. It's fantastic.
I remember there was a couple games where they went head to head and it was just like watching, you know, like Wild Kingdom when these two great animals end up fighting. You're like, I don't know who's going to win this one. It was like these two guys who are at this other level of athleticism just banging each other. It was great to have you on.
Thank you, Justin.
Isaac, it was a pleasure.
Yep. Thanks, Isaac.
Thanks to ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. My listeners can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/BS. Don't forget about the Recapables on the Ringer Podcast Network. Don't forget about NBA Desktop with Jason Concepcion. And don't forget, we have new shows every day this week, I think, right, Isaac?
Yeah.
All right.